Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And sometimes it can be hard to cut through all the noise from the Canberra bubble. But on the Politics Now podcast, bursting it wide open is our core business. I'm joined by the brightest minds at the ABC to break down the poly speak and have a chat about what's actually going on behind the scenes. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
From Wandjeri Country, I'm Luke Sidham-Dunton, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, Telstra is under fire after network outages caused chaos around the country. Hundreds of welfare checks have been conducted after 000 calls dropped out during the network crash. So, you're going to hear from the government.
Telstra's obviously scrambling.
Also, the opposition.
Do you think it was appropriate for a Member of Parliament to be making test calls to 000?
Oh, well, I mean, she's the Shadow Minister. She needs to know whether it works or doesn't work.
And the Telecommunications Ombudsman on what questions need to be answered. Then we'll change the tempo. Melbourne's Indian diaspora community is preparing to welcome Prime Minister Narendra Modi for a massive stadium event. It's part of a two-day annual leaders' dialogue he's holding with Prime Minister Anthony Albanese. We're going to hear from one group driving hours to see him.
This is the good opportunity for us to showcase our culture in front of 30,000 audience.
That is coming up. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Well, if you were like us yesterday, trying to connect to the Telstra network, you'll know just how frustrating mobile outages can be. But for some people, they're also incredibly dangerous.
I walked in and found her on the floor. She wasn't in her chair. She was in the floor in the kitchen. She said, I rang, I pressed it, which is sort of like the signal to the nominated people to get the emergency call. So we had no idea it had happened, and she had no idea why we weren't responding.
That is Lynn. She told the ABC yesterday how she found her 95-year-old mother collapsed on her kitchen floor after her personal distress alarm failed to work during yesterday's Telstra outage. It's one of the reasons why people are taking this incredibly seriously. As well as all the transport delays, there are really serious questions about the impact this outage has had on people's ability to make 000 calls. Hundreds of welfare checks have been conducted after calls dropped out during the network crash. After the initial outage, overnight, Telstra reported that it was actually investigating a secondary issue that was still causing issues for customers. So we kicked off our coverage this morning with government frontbencher Tim Ayres. He is the Minister for Industry, Science and Innovation, and he gave us an update on the situation.
There are still some challenges persisting in the Telstra network. Obviously, we're very concerned about passenger rail services in Victoria and New South Wales and monitoring the situation very closely in relation to 000 calls in particular. There's been some progress made, but Telstra's obviously scrambling to fix all of these issues. There'll be a full investigation in due course by the proper authority, ACMA. But right now, the Communications Minister is on deck dealing with these challenges.
The latest information yesterday was that the government wasn't aware of any death linked to failed 000 calls as a result of this outage. Is that still the case?
It's still the case, as far as I am aware, Sally. There is obviously work being undertaken by the authorities in each of the states to follow up on unanswered 000 calls, to do welfare checks and make sure people are okay. That work will continue over the course of the day. If there's anything to update the public on, the government will be transparent. Telstra is required to be transparent about those issues. There will be a full investigation by ACMA, as is legislated, as is required.
Telstra's given an update this morning saying that a subsequent 000 error had occurred and that it had been reduced by 90% but hadn't yet been entirely eliminated. Has the 000 issue been fixed?
I saw that update as well. I've got nothing to add to that except to say 100% is the only acceptable figure here.
Does the government plan to take any further action after Shadow Communications spokesperson Sarah Henderson made several test calls to 000 yesterday?
I'm rarely shocked by developments in politics. I was absolutely shocked by that revelation. I just say to Australians, don't do what she did. There is a framework here that is about managing these issues. Individual Australians taking it upon themselves, like apparently Senator Henderson did, to make 000 calls, like that is not in anybody's interest. It's utterly irresponsible. I don't know why anybody would do that, but I'd certainly say nobody should follow her example.
That is the government frontbencher, Tim Ayres there. Well, some pretty strong comments on the actions of Shadow Communications Minister Sarah Henderson. That is where Sally Sarah began her next interview with Sarah Henderson's colleague, the Shadow Minister for Regional Communications, Anne Webster.
Yesterday, the opposition spokesperson for communications, Senator Sarah Henderson, made several test calls to see whether 000 was working. Did you also do the same?
No, I didn't. She did send me the responses, the text responses from those calls, and the, I suppose there is some degree of comfort that at least that part of the process has been put in place. But it's a serious problem that people, when they need emergency services, don't know if they're going to be able to get through. It's just one of the crises, I think, of this whole event, once again with Telstra. And I hear that there was further issues last night that haven't been resolved either.
Do you think it was appropriate for a Member of Parliament to be making test calls to 000?
Oh, well, I mean, she's the Shadow Minister. She needs to know whether it works or doesn't work. It didn't
Isn't that
occur
the way to find
to
out?
Do the same. I don't know. You'd have to ask Sarah that. I would have thought that it was reasonable. Whether it's reasonable for everybody should do the same. But I would also suggest to you, Sally, that if people are worried, if they have an ongoing health issue, for example, or they've had issues trying to get through to 000 in the past, that they want to know that that is going to be accessible. It's a very anxious time for people when you can't make calls. And from my own point of view, I had no calls being able to go out of my phone. I couldn't call anybody still till last night. So I missed many calls from others as well. So I know the frustration that people are feeling. I think the train service clocking off, so to speak, stopping exactly where they were, 300 trains stopping yesterday, a further 95, I believe it is, today that have been cancelled already. These disrupt people's lives. I noticed in my own town here in Mildura that many businesses had closed up shop by lunchtime because they still had no FPOS available to them.
So just to go back to the start of that answer, for people who do rely on 000, they may be in a vulnerable situation, are you saying that it's okay for them to test call 000, just so I understand?
Well, I think people want to know. I mean, we're a curious, set of beings, aren't we, that if we've had cause, particularly in the past maybe, to have to call 000 and given the failures of Optus and Telstra in the past, then, people want to know that it's going to work for them. It is a natural process. It didn't occur to me to check it, I've got to say. I would like to assume that the mechanisms that have been put in place are working, but clearly there are still 331, I think is the number that Telstra have sent through to me this morning, who are still needing to be checked up on, people who have contacted 000. It's a big issue. I don't think pointing the finger at Sarah Henderson at this point is particularly helpful. I mean, she's just trying to do her job.
The government says at this stage it's not aware of any deaths linked to these outages in the past 24 hours. Liberal Senator Karen Liddle posted on Facebook last night saying she'd been told of a death linked to the 000 outage. South Australian Police commented on that post saying they were not aware of a death. Is it responsible to post that kind of material if it's not confirmed?
Well, again, I'm not going to justify anybody's behaviour. Our job in opposition is to challenge the government on how they are managing their portfolios, managing their responsibilities. That is our job. We don't apologise for that. What Karen chose to do, how she wanted to communicate that, again, you would have to go to Karen and ask those questions yourself.
Anne Webster there, the Shadow Minister for Regional Communications. some of the political response to what has been playing out over the last day. Cynthia Gebert is the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman. She also came on this morning and she updated us on this second outage that we'd been covering across the show.
We received about 30 complaints yesterday and anticipate that we'll have received more overnight, particularly on the back of further outage issues. What we're hearing from consumers is a range of challenges, and I think it really highlights how important reliable mobile service is. So we are hearing from businesses who have lost income, unable to take on jobs, contact people they're meant to be doing work for that day. You know, there's obviously a large amount of media reporting on FPOS not working, and equally we are hearing from consumers who have concerns around whether or not the system actually is going to work for them when they need it most.
Have you been getting the information that you've been requesting from both Telstra and government?
We have been getting updates. We're conscious that there is a lot to be managed across the arena, and we are looking forward to hearing the outcome of both Telstra's investigations, but also the work of the 000 custodian and the Australian Communications and Media Authority as they look to see whether there has been regulatory breaches as a result of this significant outage.
The timeline was a significant issue previously with 000 outages. Telstra notified the Office of Communications Minister Annika Wells about the outage about 2.5 hours after the initial problems were detected. Is that fast enough?
Look, we think that there will be lots of learnings through this around making sure that people know what they need to know at the right time. We obviously need to ensure that consumers are also aware of what's going on so they can make choices. You know, we saw examples of people standing on V-Line platforms down here in Melbourne waiting for trains that were never going to turn up. You know, if consumers knew earlier, maybe they wouldn't have left the house in the first place. So once we've been able to look under the hood and work out what's been going on, there'll absolutely be room for improvement, I would suggest, across the range of issues.
Given the scale of this outage and its knock-on consequences, are you surprised that we've had another failure in this way, given that there was supposed to be a crackdown previously that would prevent further 000 outages in particular?
We are dealing with infrastructure, and infrastructure obviously has frailties and limitations, but I'm exceptionally disappointed that we're in this situation again as rapidly as we are. You know, we are talking about essential services and critical and essential infrastructure, and people need to know it's going to work. I'm looking forward to seeing the outcomes, as I said, of those investigations and working out what are the settings that need to be tightened to ensure people can rely on their telco.
What options do Australian consumers have if they've been affected by these latest outages?
Absolutely. Raise your concern with Telstra directly. You know, let them know your frustration, let them know the impact, the inconvenience, or potentially for businesses in particular, the business loss that they've experienced. If that doesn't get them a fair and reasonable outcome, they are able to come to our office and we can give them a hand at getting a fair and reasonable outcome, because this will have a variety of different impacts on consumers and we need to make sure each consumer gets the right outcome for them.
Should it be easier to access compensation?
My office will be working with Telstra to make sure that consumers get what they're entitled to. So for those consumers that are entitled to compensation, absolutely be working with Telstra to make sure that that outcome is reached.
Just finally, was it helpful to have the Shadow Minister, Senator Sarah Henderson, making test calls to 000 yesterday?
I think we can all understand the anxiousness that comes when there's an outage, but the 000 system is intended to be used for emergency, and we are very keen that there's no additional pressure put on an already difficult situation by unnecessary calls being made to 000.
Were those calls unnecessary if they were test calls?
Test calls can also trigger things like welfare checks. So there are additional obligations. Obviously, if a test call tries to get through and somebody hangs up before they speak to somebody, that will trigger regulatory obligations for a telco. So we'll work through the process, I think, Sally, and see what we could do to improve the system in the long term.
Cynthia Gebert there, the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman. There will be more to come on this story. You can stay up to date on ABC News Online. We will be covering it next week on Radio National Breakfast and also The Breakfast Wrap. Well, there is a fair bit of excitement among Australia's Indian community today, with the Indian Prime Minister, Narendra Modi, set to make a public appearance at Docklands Stadium in Melbourne. 30,000 people are expected to attend. There's also expected to be some protests outside of the stadium, but those numbers will likely be outnumbered by a variety of Indian cultural groups who'll be welcoming the PM with performances like this. And that is the sound of the Adelaide-based Shivagarjuna Dol Tasha drumming group. Anup Deshmukh is the group's leader, and he's been on the road travelling to Melbourne for the event. We got him to pull over before he phoned in to Sally, and here's their conversation.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
What do you think about the gathering for this meeting, this rally by Narendra Modi?
Yeah, basically, I think this is like for a cultural exchange. And this is the like a right time and a good opportunity for us to showcase our culture in front of 30,000 audience.
Tell me about the drums that you and your group will be playing.
Basically, we play like a dhol and tasha. So these kind of drums we used to play in the ancient time when the soldiers goes on the war, and just to encourage them, motivate them. These kind of instruments used to play, and also on some auspicious events, these kind of drums we play. So yeah, this is something like auspicious day for us that Mr. Narendra Modi is coming to Australia, and it's been an honor for us to perform in front of him.
As an Indian Australian, how do you see relations between the two countries now?
The relation between two countries are good. Like the Mr. Narendra Modi is a good leader, and basically, it will be like a cultural relationship between India and Australia. Also, the relation, apart from that cultural relation, I think it will be like a good deal between India and Australia with this outcome of this meeting. I believe so.
And there are some members of the Indian diaspora here in Australia and others who protest against the human rights record of Narendra Modi and his government. How do you see all of this coming together, these supporters and those who are very vocally opposed to Narendra Modi's government and style of operating?
Yeah, see, there are some people who oppose for this, but I'm sure like this event is going to be rock, like, because this is something the Modi is coming after so many years to Australia, and this is like, as I said, this is like a good opportunity for us to showcase our culture in front of those 30,000 people.
There's been a lot of political discussion, especially in the past few months, Anup, about multiculturalism and monoculturalism in Australia. How do you see that as someone who openly and loudly celebrates their culture?
Yeah, so basically Australia is a multicultural nation. Like, the people are migrating here from different countries, and they are just preserving their culture. So I believe like it should be like the Australia is a multicultural nation, I believe. So as I said, with this particular event, it is good chance to, you know, showcase each and every, like, states have different culture. So it's good opportunity for each state from India to showcase their culture in Australia.
Anup Deshmukh there, the leader of the Adelaide-based Shivagarjuna Dol Tasha drumming group, giving us a bit of an insight into the cultural preparations underway for tonight's event. We also wanted to get a look at the politics of this visit. Shruti Pandale is the Lowy Institute's India chair, and she gave Sally a sense of what India's relationship with Australia looks like heading into this meeting.
This is the third visit by the Indian Prime Minister during his tenure. It's under the rubric of the Comprehensive Strategic Partnership. And, you know, it comes at a time where strategic and political convergence is just building, as you said, across economic, defense, security, supply chain, trade, education, and many, many more areas of cooperation which are deepening. I think the real win for India and Australia today is that the strategic rationale problem is solved. Nobody in Canberra or Delhi doubts the relationship matters anymore. I think the real test for the principals today is to take all that warmth and chemistry and deliver institutional shared capabilities going forward.
Shruti, it is a complicated relationship. We were speaking earlier with some members of the Indian diaspora here in Australia who were very enthusiastic about this visit, but there is some pushback, particularly on issues like human rights under Narendra Modi's leadership in India.
The good thing about being two democratic nations is the fact that, you know, protests and pushback are part of the way the relationship pans out in both sides of the aisle. But I think there's a lot more substantive work to be done. You mentioned the uranium conversation and the defense conversation. Both of these are extremely important. The uranium deal comes at a time when the conversation on critical supply chains matters, the conversation on energy after both the Ukraine and the Iran crisis is playing out. So these are talks about capacity and capability building. So that'll be on focus. Defense and maritime security also being very important because the access to maritime choke points has become extremely, extremely important for both sides. You're also talking about managing an aggressive China, but also managing U.S. unpredictability in the Indo-Pacific, which is a shared area of concern. And I think both sides will be trying to take that agenda forward in terms of trade, economics and investments as they meet today.
When it comes to uranium specifically, Shruti, do you think we'll see a significant agreement to increase uranium exports?
Yes, and this has been facilitated by some of the reforms that have been happening in India. You would know that critical minerals and civil nuclear energy in terms of Australian uranium access has been legally available to India since 2014. But it never actually moved commercially because largely the nuclear liability law in India made foreign suppliers nervous about exposure. What has changed with the Shanti Act that was passed December is that that it's reformed the liability regime and opened up the sector to private players. So when the officials say this visit could actually land a uranium deal, that's not really just diplomatic optimism because there's been a genuine legal fix. And this will sort of expand that uranium flow into India and take the conversation beyond into small modular reactors, battery technology, green hydrogen, etc., which are really important to both sides. Because at the end of the day, Australia wants India to become a processing destination. India wants all the technology transfer and equity, not just a tolling arrangement. And, you know, now you have the roadblocks and cooperation that have been taken off. So we'll see a lot of momentum that there going forward.
Do you think a maritime security deal will be made?
If, you know, if there's an area that has seen quick and deepened convergence is defense and maritime security cooperation. You had the defense minister from India down in Canberra in October, the first time in 12 years. You know, you have India participating in the Talisman Sabre. There's a submarine rescue arrangement. There are joint staff talks. So the logical next step, and which has been spoken about publicly, is the joint roadmap on maritime security, which will talk about domain awareness, you will talk about undersea surveillance, Coast Guard cooperation, and white shipping data sharing. All of this is important because at the end of the day, both sides converge on all the threats, whether it's shadow fleets, the, you know, the security of undersea cables, and you need to take that shared convergence to sort of operational overlap and interoperability. And when India and Australia are positioning themselves as credible partners in the Indian Ocean, which is their joint area of sort of overlap and convergence, you have to think about traditional and non-traditional maritime threats, which are multiplying. So I think it's an important opportunity for both sides to land that agreement.
Shruti Pandole there, the Lowy Institute's India chair. She was speaking to Sally Sara on Radio National Breakfast. Well, thank you so much for listening to all of those interviews. They were produced by the Radio National Breakfast team, and Kathy Van Extel produced the Breakfast Wrap. We're going to be back tomorrow with a special episode. We're going to look at the state of the US presidency, featuring an interview with Emmy award-winning Australian political journalist who's based over in DC, Jonathan Swan. He's co-authored a book on the first year of Donald Trump's second term. He's done it with Maggie Haberman at the New York Times, and it's a really insightful interview. You're going to hear basically the full thing on tomorrow's episode of The Breakfast Wrap. So, we will see you same time, same place, tomorrow.